Well, this is nice, isn't it? Hello, welcome along. It is series 5 of My Mate Bought a Toaster. It's late February 2022. Sorry, it's taken me a while to get a new series together. Just because life, really. Life's been busy. And thank you very much for still subscribing and still listening. That's the first thing to say, really. Thanks, guys. I hope you're all doing very well. And here we go. We've got a brilliant episode today. The fabulous Tim Key. So good, we have a My Mate Bought a Toaster first. In fact, two My Mate Bought a Toaster firsts today. The first one is that we are going to split this episode into two because it was such a great chat and it just went on for ages. I thought it would be nice to make it into two eps. All right. So today is Wednesday, the 23rd of February. That's when this episode is dropping. And hello to you if you're listening to this years in the future. What's 2027 like? Let me know at ToasterPod. Does Twitter still exist? Anyway, so episode one's going to come out on Wednesday the 22nd, and then I'm going to drop episode two on Friday. And that's it. This is Tim Key. Oh, and the other thing that is new in this episode is the music at the beginning. I've changed our intro music. What do you think, guys? I'm nervous about it, but I love it. Our usual guy, the very, very brilliant Ed Beaumont, has done me proud. I love this tune. It's amazing. So we have a brand new theme tune. We have a brand new guest. We have two episodes this week. We have series 5 of My Mate Bought a Toaster, which, of course, began with a good 20 minutes of technicals. Always happens, doesn't it? So you can hear me.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Yeah.
It feels like everything we need.
Great. I've got about 5 minutes now.
Oh, God. Oh, I need a laugh. There's a helping people. But Tom Bass talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, oh. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Yeah, yeah. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, oh. Toaster for my love. Hello, welcome back. This is My Mate Bought a Toaster, and this week I'm joined by comedian, actor, writer, poet, superb beard wearer, terrible user of technology, Tim Key.
So do you say welcome back at the start of each episode? As if
Did I say welcome back just then? What did I say?
Yeah, you said it as if you just have taken a break, but actually you've probably taken about sort of 10 days.
Well, yeah.
When was your last one?
I'm hoping a week ago, but my editing is awful. Sometimes I edit and it takes this one, for example. This might be a 4 or 5 hourer, so there might be a 10-day gap. I think my cheesy commercial radio life is inveigling its way into my podcast. Like sometimes I've accidentally said, "Hi, it's Tom Price here with you." Like, who gives a fuck? Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's something you have to do on commercial radio all the time.
Yeah. Do you ever accidentally say that was Eliza Doolittle?
Actually, it's Phil Collins, mate. Phil Collins is or Bee Gees. I do that in conversation.
No, the only reason I say Eliza Doolittle is because I think there was a serial killer on the loose once in Cumbria. And I think they did like a news bulletin. I think I somehow found myself on BBC Radio Cumbria because I wanted to listen to the rolling news.
Good.
So he's sort of going, well, I mean, it's all a bit unclear, but it feels like he's sort of, you know, he's killed someone and he's on the loose. So we don't quite know. And then it takes some calls and it'll be like, well, I don't know. But I mean, it could be around here. I have no idea. And then he'd go, well, this is all terrible. I mean, someone's lost their life. This is Eliza Doolittle.
There's no change in tone. There's nothing you can do. Oh, God. It's basically sick. I did a thing the other day. I was, a few months ago now, I do a thing at the beginning of my show saying, oh, today is the 14th of August and today is the day that X, Y, and Z. And I'll be honest, Tim, it's the first link of the show and I cut and paste it from Wikipedia. And it's literally just for getting me into the show, right? It's early doors. Yeah. No one's listening. It's fine, right? I did it on September the 8th. And I use a very nice bed underneath it. It's very chirpy. Welcome to the day. Yeah. And I had that bed going, as I said. And today is September the 11th, 2021. Oh. And you can probably see where this is going.
I can today's see. That's a big anniversary as well.
It's a big anniversary. It was 20 years. And that's why it was on Wikipedia. And I was like, it's the 248th day of the year. Today is the Christian feast day of... And it's the 20th anniversary of life of an atrocity. It's Eliza Doolittle.
Yeah. Can bail you out. You can't stay angry with Eliza Doolittle.
It's impossible with that surname because you sort of assume she's inherited an ability to talk to animals.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we're going to start. Here's what we're going to do, Tim. You know the ruse. We're going to dive into your Amazon purchase history, right? Now, this is, I've had a little look through and I'm thrilled because it's exactly what I would want.
It's what you're after.
It's exactly what I'm after. It's the good stuff, mate.
Well, I did that sort of thing of thinking, I think I've probably got some good stuff here for price, odd price.
Yeah.
Now, should I just really carefully go through the whole lot and just check whether I've got some bad stuff for price as well? And in the end, you just have to go, here's my password, you know, do your worst.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to, and it's going to be great. And to be honest, there's nothing to be ashamed of apart from a few playing cards, but we'll get onto that.
Yep.
Cancelled for playing cards, Tim Key. All right, so first of all, we're going back to 2003, Tim, 15th of October 2003.
Are you joking?
Oh, are you joking? No, this is how it works.
Because the thing was, I looked at it, because you said, give me a password or just screen grab. And I thought, I don't know my password, so I screen grabbed and it only went down to 6 months. And I thought, well, There you go. And then I found my password and then I found the bit where you could go to a year and then I saw that you could go to 2017. Mm. But hearing the phrase 2003 is actually, to be fair to myself, chilling.
Oh, yes.
I guess I'm going to have my memory jogged by whatever sort of, I don't know, like, you know, pinafore I bought or whatever you found.
Well, it's not that. You've got, it is weird though, but I'm so, you know.
It's weird.
Teach Yourself Body Language by Gordon R. Wainwright. That is the first thing you bought.
Yeah, well, I realised I wasn't doing any body language.
You were physically mute with people.
Yeah.
You
weren't. Everyone else was doing so much body language, and I'm sat there stiff as a board.
I mean, is this like semaphore? Can you now land planes? Is that what you've learned?
I can't land planes, but I know why I bought that book. This is because I was doing a show, I guess, in 2003. Was I? Must have been. Is it 2003? Yeah.
It's 2003. Yeah, yeah. Nearly 20 years ago.
I bet it's sort of October, is it?
It's absolutely October 2003. How did you guess?
It's my life.
To be fair. It is your account.
If anyone's going to guess it, it had to be me. No, I think what's happened here is that I've done an Edinburgh show with Alex Horn, and I use the phrase I quite loosely there because it's his Edinburgh show, a show called Making Fish Laugh.
Yes.
And I was his kind of assistant. This is a great podcast, by the way. This is straight into like a bit of my life. It's 20 years ago.
Unbelievable. This could almost work as a format.
Yeah, you know it's a good format.
I'm format cocky. I'm not going to lie to you. I am. You know you've
hit upon something here.
I have landed on some feet.
You've got yourself a format.
So,
yeah, you really have, actually. So he did a show called Making Fish Laugh, which was, you know, an honour to be in. He was like doing his first Edinburgh show, and I was his assistant, sort of sat behind him on a little desk with an overhead projector and putting
funny
acetates up. Oh, yeah,
you put acetates up very funnily.
Oh, yeah, I did. I mean, it was absolute busman's holiday for me. So the acetates are flying up, and Horn is sort of wearing his little suit and he's in his element. And we're in Edinburgh. And, I don't know, like, it went pretty well. And he got nominated for the Perrier Award, as it was then.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think actually the idea was that we'd win it.
Yeah, good plan.
I think that was the plan. It was the best newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the idea was we sort of went to the ceremony. And I think I do seem to remember his agent saying to him, you've won. but it has to be the actual, the organisers who tell you you've won, really, in the end.
Right.
No, they told us we didn't win. They were quite clear about
that. Did you tell them that Horn's agent had told him he had? Because then they might have been like, oh, hang on, maybe there's been some cross wires.
Yeah, of course. We pushed it a little bit, but after a while he realised that sort of Wayne Shepherd's holding the gong and
Wayne Shepherd, he was. Yeah. Gary Lestrange was very funny, to be fair.
It was very funny. But what I remember was the next day, Alex just sort of moving into, you know, overdrive and sort of, he's very good at, I mean, he's a man of action, really. And
yes.
he was starting to write his next Edinburgh show immediately. And his next show was about body language. And so I think we were previewing for the next year, that September.
Wow. Are you kidding? You are already...
Horn's a madman.
That's insane.
Well, you can't really fault Horn. I mean, this guy is, I don't know if you've been keeping up with him, but he now has a show called, he's doing fine.
I assume he's now just working somewhere in the normal life, somewhere,
This guy's doing Taskmaster, and he's very successful. Like, yeah, it's absolutely killing me.
And he's been on this podcast. He's been on this podcast, and it hurts.
I know he has.
It hurts
me that he was on before me.
Well, listen, better late than never. And also, we've worked out what the format is more now.
Yeah,
exactly. It was early doors then. It was almost like he was in the pilot. This is the commissioned series now.
It's a bit like when you know, someone tastes the food for the king.
Yeah, exactly. And his corpse is rotting somewhere, and now it's your turn to die.
Yeah.
If that metaphor can be stretched to,
well, you've stretched it.
I've tried. He came on, and it's going to hurt you a lot more than me. But I was in a Daily Telegraph open mic semi final, and I beat Horn's Sorry Ass at stand up. And this is back in 2001.
Yes,
so I was like, I've beaten Alex Horn for life. Now I've won. Top Price v Alex Horn. I've won that. So it hurts me too, if that helps. You know.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm. Yeah, it's nasty when they creep back round. I thought I'd put John Bishop's career to bed.
Yes!
Well, because he was nominated for the Perrier the same year as I was, and I won. But, I mean, he was pretty quick at coming past me, because he headlined the show that night with the Perrier nominees.
Wow. He was the closer.
Yeah, it was very much a case of it felt like the committee was saying, yes, there's been a glitch. This guy's won it, weirdly, but Oni goes first. Do your best, mate, and then we'll sort of we'll crank it up after that and finish with Bishop, who clearly is a TV star in the making.
Yeah. All right. So body language. There you are. So you're already preparing for Edinburgh 2004 with Alex Horn, and that's the only thing you bought.
I thought I'd do my homework. I'll learn what body language means, you know.
Remember the book? Did you ever read it?
Leafed through it, I imagine. I mean, I think if you... Now, what sort of body language was there?
That's very
I can't remember.
He just put his finger to his lips there when he was thinking, because that was like, I'm really trying to think for you here, Tom.
Well, I'm just trying to do some body language.
So he's got his hands coming in from the side now. This is like an in-house body language DVD commentary here.
Except for the guy running the lecture is doing body language to try and remember what it might mean. I mean, I don't know, like...
lovely. Big beach ball, shrug, hands on hips. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you open yourself up, that's kind of a powerful thing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's quite defensive if you're sort of crossing your arms or crossing your legs and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's something to do with twirling your hair. I don't know.
Playing with your hair's back. But for me, and for you, I guess, as well, there's the beard twiddle is a new one. That's a terrible bit of body language.
Yeah, the beard twiddle.
You know, John Finnemore yanks his beard out while he's talking to you, like he's trying to keep himself awake. Have you ever seen him do that?
No.
He will chat to you and just pull it out because he's so fucking bored by what you're talking about.
Really? Well, I know Simon Bird gives his forelock a bit of a twist. They're out there.
This is great.
These people are out there.
the body language gossip. This is a podcast in its own right.
I observed that stuff myself, the Simon Bird stuff. It wasn't in my 2003 book.
Oh no, but I love that. I really want to do that. I want to do a podcast where we just gossip about other comedian and actors' bits of body language. Mark Watson, shabby gait, very shabby gait.
Watson's got a lot of he's got a lot of scratching. Yeah, there's a lot of scratching on his sideburn.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, but he's self-proclaimed, you know, he's one of life's, you know, fidgeters. You know, I don't think Horn has any body language.
Okay. Well, if we think of any others as the podcast goes and that you're in the middle of talking about something else, just jump in with it, no matter what we're doing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just shout out any body language that appears in your head. And we'll,
I'll keep an eye on it. That was what we used to do in the show was, coming back to that book and, Amazon.
Yeah.
We'd have a camera on the audience. And so in that first show, I had the acetates. In the second one, I had a big screen and a hotel bell. So Horn would just be doing a stand-up about body language. And then I'd ring the bell and Horn would go, what's happened? Have you spotted something? And I'd go, yeah, there's a defensive guy.
That's so good.
And then the defensive guy would be on our massive screen. I don't know what you found in Horn's Amazon shopping trolley, but I lived with Horn at this point, and one of his crowning glories, he bought a lot of stuff online, and I think his crowning glory was he wanted to buy a two-way mirror or one-way mirror. I don't know which mirror it is. It's one where one way you look through it and it's a window, and the other way you look through it and it's a mirror, like when people are identifying people in a lineup,
or when you're a landlord and a sex pest. One of those. Yeah.
It's, one or the other. Uh-huh. Oh, no, it is. It's both, isn't it? You can be.
It's both. Yeah. So did he get that? Did he get a one-way mirror?
Well, it's one of those things. I did something similar where I wanted a cake fork. You know those little cake forks?
Yeah.
That you eat cake with. I mean, obviously. Yes. And I bought a cake fork, and I was incredibly surprised when it arrived, and it was, about as big as a sort of garden fork, but in the shape of a cake fork. And Horn really pulled that trick with the two-way or one-way mirror, where it arrived and it was about 800 small mirrors. I mean, they were like a postage stamp, and I think they were all like, but it was impossible. I mean, he just had now tons of mirrors.
That's so fucking stupid. So fucking stupid. One of the best, the highlights for me from the Alex Horn episode, and we'll get back to the Tim Key episode soon, was the hot tub salts, because I revealed to the nation that he has a hot tub, and that was a delight, because he did not, man of the people, Alex Horn did not want that known.
I don't think he likes to present himself as a hot tub guy.
No.
He likes to present himself, if anything, as someone who doesn't own a bath, a shower, or taps.
Yeah, exactly.
It just sort of exists as a sort of grey entity. He does have a hot tub, and... I mean, amazing statistic. I've not been in it.
What?
He goes there to, he might have told you this. He goes there to think of ideas for his arts master. It's a pretty basic existence.
It's an incredible commute as well. I'm off to work. I'm off to the coalface. I'm going to sit in some bubbles and think of stupid ideas.
I know. I mean, Roald Dahl had a bit of sort of dignity, didn't he? He had his sort of... shed at the bottom of the garden, and he'd go there to write.
Yeah,
I mean, Horn just sort of loafs out of the house in his sort of black trunks and sits there. He probably doesn't need a pen, because you don't write down the ideas he has. They're just ideas.
I reckon he shouts them through. He's probably got a scribe in the kitchen. I've got another one, marshmallows or whatever.
Yeah, Rachel. I don't think he calls her. I don't think he calls her his scribe in the kitchen. I don't think that was in the vows.
I'm going to be a scribe in the kitchen, and we'll move on. All right, we're going to move on ahead now, Tim Key, 2005, and we've got just one purchase again, 13th of September. We've gone Jeeves and Wooster, the complete series, with, of course, Fry and Laurie. And there's no kind of why did you buy this with this, is there? I don't feel like I've particularly caught you in a snare.
No, I wasn't sort of, I wasn't trying to, buy it to burn it or anything like that. It's as simple as you outline. I bought that to watch it because I like it.
This is where the format falls down.
No, I don't think so. I think there's room for everything. I think this is where the format falls up. If you're trying to sell this show, I mean,
I need to do that.
This is what you're trying to do. You're meeting these guests, these preeminent folk, and what you're doing is you're pulling the rug on them a couple of times. Yeah. You're making them dance about. You're holding a mirror up to them, but also you're saying, here's a bit more sort of wholesome stuff. You like this. Yeah. And there's no shame in that, Tom.
There's no shame in it at all. And it's also, what I can do as well, which I love doing, is I can crowbar in. I knew this would become a meta episode. Yeah. I can crowbar in. This is the key factor. I can crowbar in a kind of, well, you know, Jeeves and Wooster, Fry and Laurie, of course, famous for being footlights. And of course, you were part of that world. And suddenly, here's a bit of biography.
It's very clever. For that, I think I'm going to turn my light on.
Here we go. Love this. That has made, and I cannot emphasise this enough, absolutely no difference at all.
So what is it then? I don't know what it is. Like you've got a very crisp. You're probably using an external camera.
No, I've got a skylight. That's what's doing this. I've got a skylight.
So it is the brightness. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So do you want to ask about that?
Yeah, I mean, so you know, I'm trying to think of a more eloquent way of doing it. No, fuck it. Yeah, so Fry and Laurie went to Cambridge, so they were in footlights, so were you. There you are. You can do two sentences, please. They can be long.
Okay, so yes, I first got into comedy by doing the Cambridge footlights. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the interesting thing about my path into it was that I didn't study at Cambridge.
Mm-hmm. You were a bit of rough in the footlights, were you?
I was the rough, mm-hmm. yep. And I'd sort of found myself living in Cambridge, just outside Cambridge, because that's where I'm from. And I just sort of marched in and pretended I was at Cambridge and did an audition and got into their little sketch troupe.
So on a sort of technical level, I don't want to get into the small print of the footlights, but that's fine, right? They don't need you to be a member of the university to join the footlights, or did you just lie?
What's interesting is I think that on a technical level, yes, you do actually need to be going to Cambridge, and so I did have to present a slightly fictitious version of events. I said I was studying a PhD in the works of Nikolai Gogol.
Did you really do this?
I did an audition and you had to write down your email. And so obviously the people before had all written their emails. Yeah. And I'm looking at these emails and they're pretty, you know, they follow a certain format. Mm. But they all have the phrase Cantab.
Right. And that Cantab isn't like a pre-runner to Tiscali or any of that. This is something
else. This is very on-brand sort of, you know, Cambridge University stuff. I think .ac.uk, if I remember. There were so many of them. And then suddenly I'm sort of, writing down, Tim Key 24, PT Internet. You know? It didn't look right. They said, I think they questioned me on it as well. And I said, yeah, I haven't had my email. My email hasn't come through yet, which, you know, is a phrase that sounds like it's plausible, but actually doesn't really mean anything.
No.
And then, got the gig and sort of laid low. I was sort of living a double life where I was like, what is that thing called? A temp. I was a temp.
Yeah.
So I was working in the day. And then I'd get on my bicycle, yellow, and I'd cycle down the hill to the sort of university bit of Cambridge pile into the, rehearsal room. Because obviously they would rehearse in the evenings after they'd done all their lectures and things like that.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of doing my sort of normal kind of townsfolk.
I was town and gown.
Yeah.
Can you please... Write a film. Can you write a film called Town and Gown about this part of your life? Because I find that double life fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really explain how little I'd like to watch a film called Town and Gown. How about you?
If I had royalties on it, mate, I'd fucking watch it.
Why don't you call your TV version of My Mate Bought a Toaster Town and Gown?
Fine. Okay. Get out of the loan.
So that was it. So I'd maraud into this second part of my life, the gown part, and, be sort of writing sketches and stuff like that. The directors were then, I think they were on to me. They said, can we meet? When they cast me, they said, because we did like auditions, which was sort of partly kind of writing sessions as well to see who would be best at making this show.
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, we're going to put your, thanks for everything over the last 2 weeks. We're going to put a letter in your pigeonhole to let you know whether you're in.
Where's your pigeonhole? Were you like, what's a pigeonhole?
Well, I was doing a lot of body language when they said that, I must say.
Oh, I bet you were.
I said, oh, is it possible? I'm not going back. I mean, literally, again, stuff that doesn't make any sense. I'm not going back to my college this evening. I don't know why. Could you put it in the theatre pigeonhole? So my letter was in the theatre pigeonhole. And I remember that evening going out with my friends, my town part of my life.
Okay.
And then going to get the bus, you know, lashed with my town people and saying, I just need to go in here and get my thing. Yeah. Get the letter, and it says, yeah, you're in. And I didn't know quite, you know, it's a sort of gradual dawning where you're sort of gradually realising as it goes along what a kind of good opportunity it was.
Yeah, of course.
And with hindsight, it looks like, I mean, that's where I met Alex. That's where I met Mark Watson. And I've worked with, you know, people in that show since and stuff.
And yeah, it was a lie. It was built on a lie, to be clear.
Built on a lie, yeah. But so the illegal. Next day, after I'd been cast in it, the director phoned me up and said, there was two directors, they phoned me up and said, look, we know.
See, this happens about an hour into the film. Sorry, carry on.
Yep. Yeah, this is an hour into the film.
No, maybe earlier.
Yeah, earlier, I reckon. Yeah, 55. Okay. Yeah.
All right, 55.
So then I'm in my town section of my life again.
Yeah.
I'm watching the football at my friend Boss's house. And so I go into his garden and I'm like talking to Brino, and he says, right, we know. And we're meeting that evening to the first meeting with just the cast. You know, we've got rid of the people who didn't make it. Mm. And he says, look, let's meet in the Maypole at 5 o'clock. Okay. Before we all meet with everyone else. So we met and we had a pint, and he said, look, we know. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't even think I asked how they knew.
Right. Someone
followed me, or I'd done some bad body language at one point or something. And then he says,
I could smell it on you.
Yeah, he smelt my body language. and then he says, but we want you in it.
Oh.
So we think, just keep it on the down low. No one needs to know. And then in the next 10 minutes of the film, it's us making the show, the six of us, eight of us.
Great.
And then on about an hour and 10, it's a kind of a dinner party where we finish the script, and all of the scripts, the hard copies of the script, are all on the table. And we're like, we've done it, we've written the show. And then Brino says, yeah, Tim has something he needs to say.
Oh,
and
you had to fess up.
I had to fess up. I mean, I'd done stuff where we had a rehearsal at one point where it was in my college. That's a bit of body language. inverted commas there. It was in my fictional college that I'd nominated as where I would say I studied.
What did you do? Which college did you choose?
I went for Sydney Sussex.
That's what I'd go for as well.
And one of the people in the show, Sophie, she said, can I meet you at the Porter's Lodge? They have these things called Porter's Lodge in the gown side of things. Mm-hmm. Can I meet you at the Porter's Lodge? Because I don't know where I'm going. And so I then had to say, yeah. So then I find the Porter's Lodge. when they're just walking, we're walking through these courtyards. Very nice, actually. Very, very nice college. And at one point, we get to a wall. And it's like it is like in a computer game where you've gone the wrong way and you're sort of walking against the wall, hoping an entrance sort of announces itself. And then I go, oh, she goes, oh, why are we here? And I'm like,
oh,
doing
God.
So much body language. I'm scratching my head. I'm like touching my corner of my mouth.
I mean, it's all happening. I had head in hands. This is like Rodney Trotter walking up the wrong drive, isn't it? I mean, this is fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of the best. I think that's probably the greatest moment in British sitcom. Same episode as the Falling Through the Bar. Do you know that?
Is that in the same ep?
Yuppie Love. And he's that moment where he says, hello. Drive. Hello.
So good.
So at this dinner party, I'd say, I've been lying. So I work near the station. And, but you know, by then I was in. And they were all absolutely fine with it.
Can I just say, I wouldn't have been.
Well, I reckon it would have been.
I'd have been. No, I'm not having it. I'm not having it. Such a stickler. I'm such a stickler like that.
Well, they were having it.
That's so good.
They were having it. I think the people who wouldn't have been having it would have been the people who didn't get in. Like the first person who auditioned, where the cutoff point was.
Oh, God, there's a whole life they've not lived. They were going to work with Alex Horn and Mark Watson. And they're now working in a call centre by the station. Oh, that's the film I want to see. That's the film I want to see.
What's that one called? Town
and Gallagher? Town and Gallagher, the sliding doors version.
Oh yeah. God. Yeah, yeah. There's a movie.
So listen, the Cambridge theme continues, Tim Key, as we go through now to April 2007, where you have bought, and I didn't know, you know, the University of Cambridge have put their brand on a lot of things, certainly a lot of people, like the footlights, and yeah. you by extension have now got the University of Cambridge brand.
I'm absolutely inveigled myself. I'm riddled with Cambridge University.
Right. But there's a lot of University of Cambridge merch. I did not know. And I know you're going to piss yourself when I tell you this, that you could buy a University of Cambridge metal detector.
Wow. That's fantastic. I bought a metal detector?
It's a 23-inch detector, extends to 38 inches. You bought it 25th of April 2007. But it's a metal detector. But it's crucially, this is what's so weird, is it's branded with the University of Cambridge. So what are you hunting for? Your family's fortune? I don't know.
Well, look, I'll tell you what. I mean, you've probably got a lot of these, purchases up your sleeve. I reckon we can move on. I don't remember doing that.
No, okay. Oh, hang on. It was a gift order. It was a gift order for John Key.
Damn it. I would have guessed that. It's his birthday.
It's right. Who is John?
John's my brother. You're so the 24th right. of April is his birthday. When
a
did
classic.
I buy this?
25th.
Oh, absolutely classic. That is classic birthday behaviour.
Yeah, there it is. I mean, to be fair, it's a great present as well. Why would he not want that? Hopefully he can be seen going around Clapham Common with his University of Cambridge metal detector. He'll look like an absolute dude.
Have you got his address there then?
Yeah, I can see that. I won't read out the full address. No. Although, to be honest, it's 15 years ago. Maybe he's moved.
He has moved, yeah. Yeah, that would be Muncaster Road, yeah? Yeah, I used to live in Muncaster Road with him.
47.
He got married, and in a bizarre turn of events, I moved in.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So there's another sitcom. This was me. Yeah, living with just him and his, to be fair, new bride.
That's incredible. Yeah. So you get for your wedding, you get like bedding and towels and microwaves and things, and my brother Tim.
Yeah. In he comes. I mean, really, insanity. Now I look
one
back
bed,
on it.
One bed flat, or?
To be fair to them, you know, they had bought, well, I mean, you know, Muncaster Road, it was a nice house.
That's a nice area. Yeah, SW11, lovely.
Yeah.
Listen, there's something else earlier on in that month, which is fantastic. It makes me just delighted, really. It's a DVD from 2002. You've bought it on the 12th of April 2007. And it is Lucy Benjamin's Dancercise. That's Dancercise with Lucy Benjamin off of EastEnders.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. This is why you do this podcast.
There it is.
Now,
we're at the
buying?
Beating heart of why we do this podcast right now. Yeah.
Why
yeah,
am
yeah.
I buying Lucy Benjamin?
Can I just read you some reviews? Someone said...
Oh, read the okay. reviews. Yeah,
I mean,
sorry, yeah.
While you work it out, we've got 3 stars. Okay. S. Vincent. Okay. Only used it once. It was a good challenging program, says Sarah. I didn't rate the DVD with 5 stars as the instructions weren't entirely clear.
Well, I mean, the instructions are pretty clear. You're just dancing with Lucy.
It's Dancercise with Lucy Benjamin. It was rather repetitive, but I did feel well exercised after using it a few times. I use it every other day. And another one. The title of the review is No Problem, 5 stars. And the content of the review is No Problem. So that's nice, isn't it?
Well, look, what I would say about that is I don't like the phrase I use it every other day. And that's not because of use, but every other day is, I think I try and do some things every other day.
Yeah. Shower.
Well, you know, run or something like that.
Yeah.
But if I've got one gripe with days, it's that there's 7.
Yeah.
And 8 would be so much better for your every other day lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you reset. If this person, I can't remember if it was a girl or a boy, but if they're using this if they're dancing with Lucy Benjamin every other day, then they're I'll tell you what they're doing, which is difficult to keep a hold of. They're going Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday.
Yes.
And it's an absolute handful.
Yeah, it really is.
But every other day doesn't work for me. I think what you need to say is I use it Mondays, Thursdays and Sundays. No, sorry.
No, that's not every day.
No, Mondays, Wednesdays and Saturdays.
You're right.
That's when I use it.
Because I'm going to suggest that nobody, because of the power of the seven-day week system, nobody does anything every other day.
This is what I'm trying to tell you.
Nobody does.
And you know what? Possible. Everyone thinks they do.
Yeah, I go running every other day. No, you don't. Yeah. You do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And that's what I do. I do Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell you. I mean, I've never actually spoken about this, I don't think. And it's actually a relief to get it out there.
Yeah.
No one does anything every other day.
It's not a thing. Every other day. you do it. But the problem is the inconvenience of then having to go into the detail of the, well, I do it Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but then I often don't do it on the weekend, or I might do it on a Saturday, or I might do it on a... No one goes into that because we haven't got the words.
That's what the weekend is there for, is for the every other day stuff. I go Monday, Wednesday, Friday. A couple of days off, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm sure there's things I do on that on that basis.
So would you allow every other day during the week, during the working week, to be very specific?
Yeah, I'd allow that. Bite your hand off. Yeah. So Lucy Benjamin, the best effort I can do here is I think I'm probably buying that in, did you tell me when? But I reckon I'm probably buying that in around about April, May.
Yep, spot on.
Right, so what it is, it's 2007.
Yeah,
also it's my first solo Edinburgh show, a poetry show. And I think what I decided I would do is find something which... Has it got the running time on Lucy Benjamin's?
Can't find it off the top of my head, no. No, it's not on here.
I think what I decided I'd do is, so I had some structure in my show, I'd play something that lasted an hour, and then occasionally I'd get my technician to lift the volume of that thing just so I knew where I was. And in the end, I didn't use Lucy Benjamin's dancer size. I used an episode of Poirot. And so...
That's also here! It's... But on the same day, you bought three things, actually. You bought Bradley Walsh's Soccer Shockers.
Totally.
You bought Poirot, Agatha Christie's Poirot on DVD, and you bought Lucy Benjamin. So you were shopping to find a timing system for an Edinburgh show.
This is such a good podcast. I mean, honestly, you should be so proud of yourself, Tom.
I mean, sure, the podcast is good, but it requires someone to buy batshit things for weird reasons.
Yeah. I know. I mean, look, if I'm in a court of law and I'm accused of buying Lucy Benjamin's dancer size, I mean, can you imagine the body language of the jurors when I explain that?
So take me back to this Edinburgh show. So you're getting your engineer to just raise the volume at any given moment and you'll know where you are in the show based on...
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah, and so then near the end, it'd be like on about 50 minutes... I'd say, Fletch, let's see where we are. And he'd lift it and you'd hear Poirot saying, the answer is simple. And they're all gathered. And I go, okay, thank you, Fletch. Yeah, and I think I probably did end with the Poirot music.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I love that. So Lucy Benjamin was the rejected timing system for your Edinburgh show.
Well, I think I think when you actually think about it, everyone knows that a Poirot episode is... runs to time, and the format of a Poirot episode.
Yeah.
And you feel it revving up.
You know what's coming in. I absolutely love that moment.
How long they run for? I don't know. I mean, I sort of think I can imagine a Poirot running for 2 hours, and also of course
with ads though, mate. So you're talking an hour and a half. It's a movie. It's a movie.
Yeah. So really, it's not the perfect. It's not the perfect fit.
Well, actually, it probably is, because it's probably your midpoint death. There's always a death halfway through.
Oh, okay, yeah, fine.
So,
second death. They have a second death.
Well, actually, they don't always do that, but there often is. All fiction's got to have a death halfway through.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Go into pretty much any book, and you'll find a death halfway through. He's looking around. He hasn't got any books. No fucking books. I mean, actually, to be fair to him, I've got your new book here. Here We Go Round the Mulberry Bush, an anthology of poems and conversations from outside, which is... not only brilliant, but also a beautiful thing.
Thank you, very kind of you.
Halfway through,
is there a death?
It's you live at the BBC. Right, there you go.
Me, live at the BBC. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the nature of the book. I mean, I don't want to sort of, you know, bore your listeners with talking about my own work. But, you know, you've got to put the plug somewhere.
Here it comes.
Actually, you know, we could put the plug at the end. Or at the start. You could say something gushing at the start. Do you do a bit at the start where you go, oh, my God, I'm excited to have this guy.
Opening
gush. Jot this down. Jot this down.
Yeah, go on. One second. Anything in particular? Anything? Yeah. I'll have said how excited I am to have you on. One of those. And at the end, that's the building you up. And at the end, when you've gone, I'll be like, isn't he fucking great?
That's good.
Will you? I'll be honest. I've been on podcasts where I've listened back not to hear myself, but to hear what they said about me at either end. Griefcast.
Yeah. Have you really?
Yeah, Carriad was a bit nasty about me. All right. So,
she wasn't.
No, of course she wasn't.
She can't be.
It's impossible.
You've suffered grief.
Yes, exactly. Death has
happened. I honestly cannot wait to suffer grief so I can go on that bloody podcast.
Oh. Well, it'll happen halfway through your life.
Okay, fantastic.
Come on. Like we said earlier on, you can't go wrong with a bit of Doolittle. She's an absolute genius. There we are, then. That is part one of two. We will have a whole nother chunk of Tim Key dropping this Friday, the 25th of February. That is when we're going to put part two out. If you can't wait that long, if you are desperate, if you're, you've got some sort of bit and it's in your teeth and you're chomping away at it, then why not head over to, you know what I'm going to say now, brace yourselves, guys, Patreon. Patreon, patreon.com/toasterpod, and you can get your ears around part two right now, all ad free. There's other eps up on Patreon already as well. In fact, we have got Nigel Planer up there, Ahir Shah is up there, Maisie Adams going up there very soon as well. So loads of stuff. It's only £4, all in, £4 a month. Boom, bish bash bosh. That is your Toaster Patreon package. You're welcome. All right, guys, lots of love. See you Friday. My mate. Oh, toaster. My man.